Listening Dog Media.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Offside Rule with Lindsay Hooper and Natasha Dowie, promoting women's football since 2013.
One show isn't enough, so Tash and I reconvene every Friday for the mailbag. And Tash, I know that you love this, being put on the spot, trying to find some answers to some key questions from listeners. We would encourage you to get in touch as well if you have any comments to make. I've posted at the top of at Offside Rule Pod on X. There's a way that you can just comment underneath and I can get in touch. We are working on means for you to be able to get in touch a little bit easier. But for now, this is question one this week.
Hi, it's Emma in Manchester. For this week's mailbag, would you be able to give us your thoughts on whether Chelsea will suffer a significant dip when Emma Hayes leaves or not? Thank you.
Good question. I guess it's on everyone's lips when Emma Hayes goes to the States. What state do you think Chelsea will be left in, Tash?
So if you look at their number nines, Lindsay, Fischl, Kerr, Ramirez, Macario, four number nines that could get into any team in the world. And that's four number nines competing for that number nine role. So, I mean, firepower, once Millie Bright's back as well, I think that's key. So, look, they're in a good place. They will be up there fighting every year like they always are. It's just who they bring in, that's the big question.
Emma Hayes, I understand, is keen to get a female coach and she's part of the recruitment process, which is probably what has delayed it somewhat. Because let's face it, it's not a big pool to swim in, is it? And if Casey Stoney can't do it and Bon Pastor can't do it, or Jill Ellis and all these different people, then suddenly it becomes very shallow waters to try and fish in, to try and get someone. So maybe they're going to have to open out and consider taking a male coach. What I would say is, having worked with Chelsea and worked with Emma for quite some time, she works 2 to 3 windows ahead. And I actually don't think that Chelsea will be in a bad position when she leaves. I think what you need to look at is 2 or 3 years after she's left. That's when I think Chelsea will start to materialise in the new frontier. But I think her legacy will actually live on for a while because she is a forward planner. She's worked on those windows ahead of time. That, remember, she's not taking all of her coaching staff with her. So there's a lot of people that will be left behind as well. So I think for a good 1-2 year cycle, we won't really notice. It wouldn't surprise me if Chelsea won the league the year after she leaves. But I think it could be part of her, like, inheritance, if you like, that they managed to do that. It's 2 to 3 years time when I think it will be very interesting to see what state Chelsea are in. I do think that they will be overtaken for a while. You have to get some security and you have to have a really established setup. And I think that other teams, we've seen that Gareth Taylor's just got a new contract at City. So they're very secure, aren't they? I think they're going to be a team for the future. And I think Arsenal as well, with the players and the money they're spending. it's very likely that one of those could overtake Chelsea in a couple of years for a few years. But then what do they do next? Do they come back stronger? And that will be in the recruitment and those decisions that they're having to make right now. So yeah, that's where I'm at with it. I don't think that we'll see it for a while. But I think if anything's going to unravel, it will be in a couple of years. On to our next question.
Hi, my name's Oliver, and I would like to ask a question on the sustainability of finances in the women's game. Do you think that there is an inherent vulnerability or risk for women's teams that are dependent on or connected to, historically, for want of a better word, men's clubs? If you look at the top of the men's Premier League table, you can see Manchester United, Manchester City, Arsenal, Newcastle, Aston Villa, and historically Chelsea. And those women's teams are unlikely to suffer from a reduction in finances for men's teams. Whereas at the foot of the table, you've got teams like Forest, Crystal Palace, Burnley, Sheffield United and Everton. All are facing uncertain financial futures should they drop out of the men's Premier League. What are the risks that women's teams have on being connected to that funding and the volatility of it should a team drop out of the league?
It's interesting because I was asked to help out some students this week for UCFB with, I think they're doing a dissertation around the sustainability of the women's game going forward. And I answered a few questions. So I'll be interested to get your take on this first, Tash, because that's changed within your lifetime as a player. The game changed massively. But my theory is it can change again. But let's see what you think.
Yeah, well, I've had plenty of situations where this has happened. So when I was at Charlton, when I was 18, so a long time ago, over, 15 years, I was with Charlton. We were probably second best team in the league after Arsenal, making FA Cup finals, and the men get relegated. And then the women's team got the plug pulled. So that's why I ended up then making the move to Everton. So that was happening back then. A year ago, I was at Reading. So this is now, 10 years on, who have been in the league for 8 years. The men obviously are suffering, get relegated. The women's team then suffer, now semi-pro, potentially might even have more of a negative effect in the years to come. So with a 10-year gap, it's still happening in the game. And this is a problem that, look, football, it is financially a risky business, full stop. Whether you're at your Chelsea's and City's where you have billionaire owners, they could one day turn around and say, actually, I don't want to fund the women's team anymore. You know, so it is that kind of industry that we're in. And if you look at the Premier League and the Championship, Lindsay, 63 out of the 92 clubs made a loss last year. So everyone's losing money. It is the way it is. And when you do get relegated, club have to cut loss, and tends to be then the women's team are affected by this. So it's one of those things that really going alone, I think, is too much of a challenge. You know, and I've been there with the likes of your Doncaster Bells when I was with them for a short amount of time, trying to be that team where you're going on your own. It's too tough. It's too big a challenge trying to get sponsors and to be able to compete. So really that risk v reward is probably better being with a male club and then just kind of, sounds awful, but praying that they see the way the women's game's going and they want to invest. And I do think it's less grist these days, but we talk about your Bristol Cities, you know, it's probably only that kind of top half of the table where they really are quite comfortable and you know that they're guaranteed. It's the other teams then. When the men's team are doing well and they're winning, it's okay. If you look at the likes of Everton now, who the women's team have always had good backing, have always been up there competing. What happens then if Everton men get relegated this season? That's obviously going to then have a massive effect on the women's team. Their budget isn't going to be as big. You know, they're not going to be able to then attract it. And it is. It's unfortunately, it's the way it is. I mean, I'm sure you've got lots more opinions on it as well, but it's just the world we live in.
Well, the way that I see it, and I have done a lot more reading around this because I was helping these students out. So it just so happens that it's a similar sort of question to one that I've just helped with a dissertation. But I think we're in a building phase at the moment of the women's game. And so the benefits of being associated with a men's side in the Premier League at the moment, of course, is to do with the income, but commercial deals as well. It means that, you know, you can have a big injection of cash. It's the brand, the worldwide brand that that Premier League team has. So it opens up more opportunities for that women's team to be seen in 180 different countries, wherever the Premier League goes. And facilities, I guess, you know, much better facilities. You know this from Liverpool. They've just bought back Melwood and handed it to the women. That used to be the men's training facility. So the facilities are going up. And I think that's all a great thing. And in terms of aftercare as well, when we see the amount of ACL injuries, the amount of staff that are available via being having that connection with the Premier League sides, you've got all of that knowledge and those key roles on site, haven't you, that you can just delve into. So all of that are the benefits at the moment. But I think we're in a building phase. There is a legal framework there that I've read into about the ownership model, where the owners of these Premier League teams can sell off the women's team in the future. That is possible. There's a legal framework in place. So if you look at the NWSL, I know that it's different in America because it's always been that women's football's been bigger than the men's, but there's no direct correlation between MLS and women's teams. They are their own entities. And I think in the future, you probably will see teams being sold off to then change the badge, change the name, change the framework and make it more like that NWSL structure, because it will be big business by then and it will have its own audience, its own customer. Whereas at the moment, we're sharing a customer, if you like. We're trying to get the men's customers over to the women's, you know, dual season ticket holders, all that sort of thing. Whereas there is a plan for the women's game. We know that it's been tipped to be this £1 billion enterprise at some point. Well, how does that change? I don't think it becomes this £1 billion enterprise by still being attached to the men's sides. I think it becomes this £1 billion enterprise by all of those assets being sold off and owners making quite a bit of money from it. But it will take that first person to do it. And then it will be like dominoes, I think. And suddenly you look at your Durhams and you look at your Lewises and these teams that stood alone. And I actually think they'd be in a really good position to then level things up so that there isn't a huge advantage or a huge gulf from having the money to not having the money. Because if you've got all independent franchises, then they will work on their own merit. So that is my utopia vision for how the game might go. But that's from reading around it. And that's what I hope the plan is. But it relies on the people at the very, very top to have this vision, doesn't it? To be able to take it in that direction. But I think this building phase is going to go on for a while longer yet. I think we've got a good decade maybe before we see anything like that.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
The Offside Rule Mailbag.
Right, over we go to the third and final question, which came in quite late, this one. And it's from someone who's worked with the Offside Rule for many years.
Hi, Lindsay and Tash. It's Aidan from the Offside Rule team. My question is, what are your thoughts on BFC's world record signing, Rachel Kunijani from Madrid CFF? And do you think it'll be sooner rather than later before we see the first £1 million transfer in women's football?
Pure coincidence, but you missed this in our show on Tuesday. So this signing, we're getting closer, aren't we? I don't think we're far at all from having a £1 million player. Could it be the next window or the window after that?
Yeah, I think it's inevitable, isn't it? When you look at people are nearly paying £1 million just for transfers, then I think that a salary is going to be coming pretty soon. And I was actually doing a bit of research, and within 4 years, so in 2020, Peniel Harder, £250,000. 4 years on, now we're looking at £685,000 for the Bay FC transfer. So that's £435,000 increase in 4 years.
Ooh,
now, that's a lot.
Wow.
You know, so that's huge. you know, and you look at what Bay FC are doing with the likes of Brandi Chastain, Ali Wagner, Osborne, you know, all those ex-pros from America. And I think it's Sixth Street Investment. They've already said that they're going to commit to owning the franchise for the next 10 years. So like you said, that stability is there. Financially, the money's there. So I think 100% within the next couple of years, you're going to see it happen. Wow. You never ever thought the day was going to come, would you? I think it's great to see, isn't it? Because we want it to go in the right way. We want it to be steady. We want it to be sustainable. But God, can you imagine, Lindsay, when you and me were younger? I mean, people asked me what I wanted to be. And obviously, I wanted to be a football player. I never thought the opportunity to be a pro would happen. And luckily for me, it happened. But then to be able to then say that you've got female players becoming millionaires and earning that kind of money, it is. It's pretty crazy, isn't it? The journey that women's football is going on.
It changes the landscape as well for young girls. I remember because I was super sporty myself, you know, ended up going to Loughborough. I was a bit of that jack of all trades, master of none type, which I hated because I just wanted to be the best at something. But you know, when I was growing up, I was looking at how could I make money from this? And how could I do this for a living? What sport could I do for a living? And football wasn't an option. I didn't see it as an option then. And I thought it's tennis and golf. And maybe if you were really good at athletics to the point where you're like Paula Radcliffe, you can make a lot of money, or Dame Kelly Holmes. But, you know, I think really, if you're a woman or a young girl and you're wanting to be a professional in the future and you think, right, sport's my thing, I want to do this, then you'd be encouraged, wouldn't you, to play golf or tennis. And now it's like football is here. Football is level with those. You can go and you can earn good money and you can be a professional. And now we have an opportunity like the boys have always had in whatever sport they want to do. And suddenly we've got a few more options. And I really hope it opens up to, you know, cricket's becoming a lot more accessible now. I don't think it's at the levels of tennis, golf and football, but I think it's getting there. Rugby the same. You know, how great for these young girls coming through that they might have these options that we never had. So it's really exciting that it could go that way. I'm going to say let's put a prediction on this because, and I'm awful at it because I never thought that the game would get to where it is in my lifetime, let alone predicting a £1 million player. But if you were to put me on the spot right now, I think we're round about, looking at the competition between the leagues, three transfer windows away, I'd say.
Okay.
What are you going to say?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm definitely backing you there. Yeah I agree 100%. I wouldn't surprise me if, I know I've spoken about your Hegerberg, but that new American league, I really do think she could be a player that gets, or your Lucy Bronze, you know, some of those big names that potentially might want to try somewhere else. That could be one of them.
Well, if these conversations have got you thinking and you want to put something to us, please do for next week's mailbag. You can find us on social media at Offside Rule Pod. Go to TikTok, Instagram or X and leave your comments and we will give you a follow back and ask you to leave us a voice note. We really encourage you to do that because that's the only way that this show is going to keep running. Tash, thank you very much. Enjoy the Isle of Man. You're going out today on your sightseeing and then on duties tomorrow.
Yes, and I'll be definitely spreading the word to the young football players that the opportunity now to be a professional football player is there. So it's great to see. I can't wait to see all the young kids playing football. That's what it's all about.
And I think you've got a nice day for it as well, which is a bonus.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Speak to you again next week.
The Offside Rule Mailbag. Send us your questions on social media. We're at Offside Rule Pod. Sports Social Podcast Network.